we're actually at the precipice, in my opinion, if I had to put money on it now, of a new golden age. I think America is really going to have a second breath now. Trump is an instinctual animal. He doesn't have to read something to understand or get the gut feeling about something, which is very, very important for a leader and very important for an entrepreneur, right? Because while the Elon Musks of the world like build and create and produce, you know, Bitcoin slowly obsoletes the vampire class, the parasite class. I spent 2 years wrestling with this question. Is it enough if Bitcoin wins? How will those who hold it behave when they become the new elite?
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Alex Svetsky in the house. But Alex, you recently had a banging article come out on your Substack called Hard Money, Hard Men, What Happens When Bitcoin Wins? So I'm going to ask you right off the bat, man, what happens when Bitcoin wins?
Bro, first of all, good to see you again. It's been a while. Well, actually, it hasn't been a while. It's been like 2 weeks, but it's been a while since we actually had a conversation online. What happens when Bitcoin wins? Well, that's the topic of my book, actually. So if anyone wants to know, they can go read the book and it's done. There we go. Adios. No, seriously. It's an open question. I think a lot of the Bitcoin community has this belief that, oh yeah, Bitcoin fixes everything and somehow magically turns everyone into a virtuous character that, you know, becomes a saint and all this sort of bullshit. And I used to believe that as well. I've written, I think, more than 2 million words on Bitcoin across God knows how many blogs and Bitcoin Magazine and Zero Hedge and my own shit and all this sort of stuff. And I was firmly of the camp that Bitcoin fixes everything, Bitcoin transforms behavior and all this sort of stuff. And there is some truth to that. But the longer I've been around, the more I've realized that it's not really a panacea to things. And if anything, I actually believe that the people who believe that the most or who have the most profound changes, I think they had a predisposition for that. And then they happened to find Bitcoin. Because I know many people who found Bitcoin turned into complete fucking degenerates or shitcoiners or whatever. Like, in fact, if anything, there's actually more of those people. And if anything as well, evidence suggests that coming into a significant amount of wealth in a short period of time generally transforms people for the worst, right? They're not ready to cope, or they're not ready to deal with the shift in socioeconomic significance that comes with becoming wealthy, right? They don't know how to behave. So anyway, it's the question, and the way I tried to answer it is, I said, okay, look, let's just have a tough discussion about this. You know, the question's like, does money actually make us softer? Like, does increasing economic standards and material standards in particular, does that cushion you and make you more comfortable, thereby leading to entitlement and leading to effectively communism? Like, is capitalism the path to communism? Like, so ask all these sort of tough questions. And in the end, I won't give away the essence of the book here, but I don't think there's a clear-cut answer. And I think it all sort of ties back to the behavior or the virtues that people choose to inculcate or practice, right? So it's like, who do you forge yourself into? Like, what character are you going to build? And character is a function of the virtues and the behaviors you live by. And my, I guess, the supposition of this article is that we have hard money now. But what we also require alongside that is hard men in order to get the world course correcting. Like, we need to move into a better direction, because up until now, we've been moving into a really shitty direction. And I think there's been an energetic shift. I think we have seen the rise of stronger and better men, and those men moving into stronger positions of power, which is good. It's still early days. You know, there's nothing to really celebrate yet, because there's a long way to go yet. But yeah, that's ultimately, for me, what happens when Bitcoin wins. Well, it's still an open question. We don't know. My hope is that Bitcoiners step up to the plate, and maybe in some way, shape, or form, the work that I'm doing now with the book and everything is going to hopefully nudge Bitcoiners in that direction. So that's my long answer.
Yeah, no, I think it's like a very interesting question. But let's back it up here, because I'm curious to see how you see we get to I guess like when Bitcoin officially wins, because I see somewhat of like two paths, like one where everything crashes and burns. And even if you have Bitcoin, there's going to be some pain. It might be tough to get, you know, eggs at grocery stores, like that kind of aspect. And it might be a decade plus to rebuild that and get to a place where, you know, we're prosperous again. On the flip side of things, we kind of have like a slow development and Bitcoin kind of slowly takes over. We get a lot of these micro communities pop up, and then Bitcoin just eventually just swallows everybody. And there might be a slight transition, but it's a little bit more smooth than in the first example. So do you see it as like basically like two paths right now, like as I'm lining out? And if so, like which one? Or do you see a different way we get to Bitcoin officially, I guess, getting to the finish line and winning, becoming a hyper-Bitcoinized world?
Mm. Yeah, I used to be a little bit more in the former camp. Now I'm in the latter. I think the world is more complex. There's different places that different things are going to happen. Some places are going to really mismanage and fuck themselves over. Some regions will not. I think ultimately we're going to end up with Bitcoin and the US dollar. And then on a longer time frame, we're going to just end up with Bitcoin, obviously. I think my time frame is a lot longer than most people. I don't think hyper Bitcoinization happens for another century or more. I think it's after we're gone, long after we're gone, in fact. Yeah, I think there's going to be pockets of disasters, but I'm no longer a doomer. I think what's interesting is when shit breaks in particular areas, when things go wrong, etc., it as bad as it is, it also opens up opportunities which seem to get filled by enterprising individuals, organization groups, etc. So, you know, like, look at what happened with the whole free speech thing, for example. That put pressure and all of a sudden something like Nostra popped up. Now, Nostra has a long way to go before it becomes strong or useful or any of that sort of stuff. But, you know, you apply pressure and human ingenuity is pretty close to infinite. It's a miraculous thing. And I feel like and maybe sometimes to our detriment, right? Like this I guess, was Ayn Rand's whole, the basis of Atlas Shrugged, which is, the good men, the productive class, they end up keeping the system going, even though the system sort of leeches and extracts from them and all that sort of stuff. With Bitcoin, hopefully we have an opportunity to, while the good men keep things going, while the Elon Musks of the world like build and create and produce, you know, Bitcoin slowly obsoletes the vampire class, the parasite class. And that's sort of the best case scenario. But Ayn Rand suggested that, hey, maybe what needs to actually happen is the productive people need to go into a gulch, let the fucking thing collapse, and then we come back. I don't think that's a good idea. I think that sort of destruction of capital would be really bad. And it would take, I mean, I don't know how long it would take to rebuild it, but it would, I think it's an unnecessary thing to go through. You don't have to go and, like, if you're not happy with your house, you're better off renovating bits and pieces, not burning the whole fucking thing down and starting again. Granted, it depends on how really, really, really bad things are. And I don't think things are that far gone. Maybe in some places, like there's some places, and I, you know, I'll say this and I don't want to say it too publicly online, but for me, some places I just say, look, this place just needs a fucking nuke, bomb the thing to the ground, level it and start from scratch. I don't think we're there yet for most of the world. And I think it would be a shame to see things collapse to the point where Bitcoin's worth nothing. That would be a shitty situation.
Well, I don't know if it would be like a place where Bitcoin's worth nothing. It's just, you know, like everything has just kind of gone to that direction, whether it's, you know, fading away, you know, the way that the structurally built is just like weak. So instead of, you know, like you said, like kind of renovating, just the foundation is poor, right? So, and it might be better
Go ahead. I was going to say that would imply Bitcoin being worth nothing, right? So if all the infrastructure falls apart, like remember Bitcoin measures capital. Bitcoin is not necessarily capital itself. Like the point of money is not that the money is worth something, is that it's measuring wealth. And if we erode and destroy the wealth, which is land and property and food and infrastructure, if all of that's gone, like the total market cap of Bitcoin becomes $1 million, right? Like it's worth nothing. So that's what I mean there. It's like, it's not that Bitcoin is useless, but it becomes worth less, which is a little bit different than useless.
Okay. And that is kind of like an interesting way to think about this. So, you know, with that then, okay. So then how would, you know, I guess let's back it up here, because I think you started off with by saying like you were kind of surprised that, or not surprised, but a lot of people in the Bitcoin space, you say, have gone a little bit more towards like the degeneracy. Now, mm-hmm. why do you think that we've kind of like Bitcoiners maybe have gone down that path opposed to, you know, I guess like the fix of money, fix the world? And I mean, the devil's advocate in me also wants to point out like Bitcoin's kind of first use case was on the Silk Road. So I feel like we've gotten like it's just Bitcoiners in general have gone through this like weird evolution where at first it was like degenerates. And now we're kind of getting into like the holistic, you know, no seed oils, like workout, you know, self-sovereign. And then maybe we'll get back, like, you know, as soon as we'll see the price run up, we'll see more people, you know, become the degens and kind of be like more risky, more into gambling, like that kind of stuff. So, you know, why do you think we're kind of, I guess, almost reverting back to that?
Yeah, I mean, I actually have come to the realization that I think Twitter did more for Bitcoiners than Bitcoin did. What I mean by that is it gave us the public square is where a lot of these ideas get hashed out. Things like no seed oils and eating meat and getting sunlight and all that sort of shit. Like Twitter actually gave us a forum to discuss these ideas. And it just so happened that a number of Bitcoiners were talking about that stuff. And because this public square connects people who have common interests, the thread that binded a bunch of us was Bitcoin. And as a result, we converged around a couple of other ideas. And I don't, and it's not so clear to me anymore that that was Bitcoin that did that. I actually think it was Twitter that did that, more importantly. If Twitter didn't exist, we wouldn't have this kind of convergence of ideas. I don't think magically we lower our time preference and we become fucking, you know, anti-seed oil people and all that sort of stuff. I think actually, as much as Twitter gets a bad rap and social media and all this sort of stuff, like I think that was the reason that happened. Bitcoin was just a interesting commonality, which also has some more sound holistic principles. So therefore, there was a shorter mental leap to make for that stuff to also make sense to people who are predisposed or already held Bitcoin, right? But I've found like for a bit of time, I've been out of the Bitcoin loop on Twitter and stuff like that. And I went down the right-wing loops and Substack and this and that. And I found people who, in my opinion, are way more fucking based than any Bitcoiner I've ever met. And they're doing the seed oil free stuff, et cetera, but they couldn't give a flying fuck about Bitcoin. They haven't crossed that. So they've come from another way. So to me, that evidence proved that it wasn't really Bitcoin that did that. Like there's other pathways to it. And for many of those, it was once again, the community they built around Substack or the community they built around Twitter and the interaction that they managed to have. So I don't know if I'm answering your question. I even forgot what the hell your damn question was, but is that kind of on the right track? I don't know.
Yeah. It was kind of on the right track, but it's interesting that you're saying that because like I've made a lot of, newer friends in Tampa since I've been out there, and a lot of them are not Bitcoiners, but they're halfway there is how I like to describe it, because they're mm-hmm. all like, you know, hit the gym, you know, not really go and get the jab because like you can just be healthier by just eating right. You know, no seed oils is a big thing, especially, you know, I feel like in the younger community, but like half of them think I'm a lunatic for like being into Bitcoin and doing what I do here. So I think it is kind of interesting where it almost seems like it's a shift. And I think not only Twitter, but it's, you know, kind of what happened in 2020 with the lockdowns and everything else totally. That kind of just pushed people that way. But I guess since 2020, who do you think has been more influential, I guess, you know, towards Bitcoin? Do you think, are you saying like maybe Elon purchasing X would be potentially like the most influential person in the Bitcoin space?
Fuck yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, some Bitcoin purists are like, oh, but he's a Dogecoin maximalist and all this sort of stuff. And I mean, I'm more than happy to turn a blind eye to that stuff. Like, the guy is the most important, between him and Trump, they're the two most important dudes on the planet today, right? Like, they are the personalities that took civilization by the balls and single-handedly shifted it. Like, if Elon didn't take over Twitter and change its direction, we'd be fucked by now. Like, there's no way fucking Trump would have won. There's no way the energy would have shifted. The whole dissident sphere, and including the based Bitcoiners and all of that, what would we have gone to? Fucking Noster? Like, sure, Noster is cute and all that sort of stuff, but there's no fucking way there's enough critical mass there for us to have found each other and to do anything of significant value. So to me, I think, yeah, Elon by far is the gutsiest, most influential. Like, he's an Ayn Rand protagonist, in my opinion. And I've had my periods where I've been quite critical of him. Obviously still disagree with him on the electric car bullshit. I think that's a waste of time. I'm somewhat critical of the Mars stuff, only insofar as I think resources could potentially be better spent elsewhere, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's his resources, and he wants to push the envelope of what's possible with civilization, and particularly seeing what he's done with SpaceX recently and the ability to now to, like, fucking land a rocket and everything. Like, he's blown all of the naysayers out of the water. The guy's fucking brilliant. And what I love about him is that he does all of this stuff in public. So what he has the courage to do is make the mistakes in the arena while all the fucking dorks are out there, like Tyson DeGrasse and all this sort of shit, like pointing out, oh yeah, but this and that. And even all the fucking Bitcoin dorks who are like, oh, but this and that, you know, they're like, everyone's got a lot to say, but everyone fucking pales in comparison to the output or the productivity that he has. So for me, that's a real marker of a leader, of greatness, of an excellent man, of you know, true nobility and all of the things that I respect. And likewise with Trump, man. Like, he's done, like, you know, there's idiots out there who are of the opinion that, you know, he set up the shot to his head. I'm like, are you fucking dumb? Like, to even believe that tells me you've got, like, a negative count on your brain cell number, right? Like, it just literally, you're a moron if you think that. So the fact that that happened, and then he gets up and he said what he said, which is, that was kind of the kicker for Elon. That's when you saw him shift and actually put his energy behind Trump. Like, that kind of character is very, very, very rare in the world, let alone in politics, right? So that's authentic, and that's leadership, that's strength, that's courage, that is that's what a captain does, which is very opposite to what a coward does. And once again, you know, Bitcoin purists will sit there and be like, oh, but he launched the shitcoin and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't think they understand, like, Trump didn't sit down and think about, oh, you know, how can I write a fucking ERC-20 token and launch it? No, that's not what happened. It's like, there's a big cabinet he's got to run. He's got bigger things to worry about. And if someone says, hey, we can raise a bunch of fucking capital through doing this, it's like, whatever, at some level on the thing, he would have been like, yeah, sure, no worries. Go play with your little fucking thing. If it's going to bring some money into our campaign to make America great, which is the real fucking focus here, then that's what he did. Like, I don't think someone like that has time to sit down and read the fucking Bitcoin Standard or give a fuck about that. Like, he's got more important things to worry about. So anyway, long way of saying, I think those two guys are by far the two most influential people. Obviously, you got Bukele as well, Milei, stuff like that. There's some other really strong archetypes, people like Ross Stevens as well. I think he's an absolute Ayn Rand protagonist as well. But yeah, man, we're moving in the right direction, I think, in that capacity.
Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
Well, with all this, I mean, I do agree, like Elon, with the free speech movement, is very, very influential. But I'm curious your opinion on Jack Dorsey, because he's investing a lot in Noster. But, you know, Twitter kind of got to where it was prior to Elon be under his watch. So what do you take of him, even though he's kind of investing a lot in these Bitcoin companies and, yeah, the Bitcoin movement in general?
I don't know anymore, man. Like, I used to be critical of Jack, and then I was very supportive of Jack, and now I'm like, I don't know, because particularly seeing what Elon did and the level of turnaround he was capable of. Now, one could argue, like, look, Elon had way more resources, way more whatever. And sure, you know, maybe I don't know what situation Jack had in the background, how he was compromised or what happened, like where the weakness was in his inability to do what Elon did with Twitter. You know, whether he's got his own, I don't know, leftist predispositions or whatever, he clearly does. I mean, I'm pretty sure he funded some, that Ibrahim guy, the guy who wrote Anti-Racism, which was like, when I found that out, I was like, what the fuck? Like, why would you give this fucking turd of a creature like $10 million? So I don't know if that was Jack playing 4D chess so that he didn't like get mobbed by the woke virus or whatever. So I don't know. You know, I guess to the best of my ability, I feel like Jack is somewhat cognizant of what happened with Twitter, and maybe in his, maybe he's, I don't know if the word guilty is right, or like he feels bad about it or whatever the case is, but now he's pouring a bunch of money into trying to develop Nostra, which is his attempt at, kind of like repenting. For lack of a better term. So I hope it works. I mean, I'm building a fucking business on Nostra. That's like, so I believe in the concept. I believe in the vision. I believe that Jack is a smart person, all this sort of stuff. But I'm just seeing a lot more progress, for example, from Elon and that kind of thing, and a lot less from the whole Nostra open source, blah, 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 all that sort of shit. I'm seeing way less traction and progress there, even though that's where I've chosen to put my personal capital, time, and energy. So we'll see. I hope we're just going through the phase of building, which just naturally takes a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it is this whole like kind of space is like super interesting because, yeah, like we saw Elon basically flip itself on its head. But on the other side of things, like, you know, Jack and Square, Block, they aren't, you know, kind of pushing forward Bitcoin too much, I would say. Like, obviously, Cash App is very big and influential in the States. But, you know, Square, you know, they're not really moving that forward with integrating Bitcoin payments on there. You know, Block has said that they're going to start something with Bitcoin mining. And, you know, I haven't heard any progress or anything like that related to that. So it is kind of interesting how we're seeing, like, the differences of the way that Elon is pushing his company and kind of just flipping it on its head, where it seems like Block and Square and all these other things under the Dorsey portfolio are just, I guess, showing a lot less progress and taking more time. So I don't know if that's just because, you know, Block is publicly traded and now Elon took Twitter back to private or what, but just the dichotomy between the two is very interesting to me to see how they're just kind of like approaching the two different, I guess, like freedoms of the world, where Elon's taking Twitter, a giant platform, and you know, kind of moving from there. But I want to get back onto the aspect of Trump. Like, how big do you think it was him coming in and kind of trying to embrace the Bitcoin community? I wouldn't put like too much weight behind like all of what he said at the Bitcoin conference, but he's like starting to see the value in that. How influential do you think that is, just, I mean, in general?
Yeah, I think Trump's instinct is very good. I think Trump is not like, so he's different to Milei in the sense that Milei has instinct, but he's extremely well read in like Austrian economics and all that sort of stuff, right? I think Trump is a fucking instinctual animal. He doesn't have to read something to understand or get the gut feeling about something, which is a very very important for a leader and very important for an entrepreneur, right? Because the entrepreneur or the leader, it's impossible for him to have the time to do all of that study and all of that pre-work, right? In many ways, I guess Millais is an anomaly here because he did a lot of that pre-work beforehand and now he's able to parlay that forward, whereas Trump's pre-work was actually in business and building and negotiating, doing all that sort of stuff, which is why he's developed such a strong, like, he's got fucking aura, right? Like, he's someone who you can make a deal with versus like a loser like Biden, right? There's zero aura there versus like I don't know. I'm pretty sure Trump's probably the personal life today with the most aura, right? Like, he's the only person you take a photo of his fucking silhouette and everybody on the planet will know who it is, right? Like, that doesn't happen with anybody else. So to bring it back, like, he's an animal of instinct. And he, I guess, very correctly sensed a whole series of things. It wasn't just that the Bitcoin community and the Bitcoin ecosystem was an audience to tap into. He obviously did the Russ Ulbricht thing. He's gone after like the farmers and the disenchanted middle class, like all these sort of like verticals, right? Young men, right, is another big one, particularly young white men, Americans, all this sort of stuff, like people that have felt disenfranchised. He heard that, he sensed it, and he was able to tap into that. And in doing so, like, I mean, everything down to the skit that he did with the garbage truck and like the McDonald's thing, like he was just fucking on point. Now, I don't know exactly how much of that is his personal idea or his cabinet or the people around him or his son, whatever, but there's obviously something there. He's obviously A, got an instinct for it. B, he's obviously done a hell of a lot better this time in constructing a team around him than he did last time, which are all massive ticks in my box. And it's really interesting because when I heard that in the early days, like last year, for example, that Trump was running again, I was like, oh, fucking, you know, he fucked up last time. He's too old. He should just give it up, right? I was thinking we need somebody else, like maybe a DeSantis or something like that to come in. But it turned out like, man, Trump just sort of like, it took him a little bit to get the momentum going. But once he got the momentum going, like he is almost like a Caesar figure. And this actually ties into something that I've been thinking about recently. I've for many years been of the opinion that America and the West was at the Rome in 450, 480 BC stage, which is a decade or so away from the end of Rome, right? I actually flipped the script on that. I think we're at a different point, which is more like 50 or 100 BC, which is the end of the Republic, the beginning of the Empire. Which Rome sort of had this decay, came towards 1500 years before Christ, and then came into a fucking golden age with Julius, Augustus, etc., that came afterwards. And for a couple hundred years, Rome became once again the most glorious power in the world. And I think we're actually at the precipice, in my opinion, if I had to put money on it now, of a new golden age. I think America is really going to have a second breath now, and whether that means it becomes a fucking empire or some, you know, variant of it, whatever it is, I think something new is about to form, and I think America is a very important component in that. Also, places like Salvador, Dubai, Singapore, etc., and like sort of the rising sovereign states. In fact, in the book, to do a little bit of a preview here, is the book is made up of six parts, and I'll explain the parts later, but right at the end, I've got a section called Visions of the Future. And I was originally writing all this sort of abstract stuff about like future governance models and all this sort of shit, and I ended up scrapping that. And what I did instead was I wrote a short story, about 10,000 words or whatever, of a person living in the year 2084. And what the world looks like with the old world UN, which is like a big homogenous globalist blob, versus a series of a network of executive states, what I call, which are essentially city states, free private cities, free countries, which include like the Free State of Texas, which is its own sovereign state, El Salvador, which at that time is now the Central America Coalition, because Bukele's son has taken, or his grandson has taken over that whole regional sort of shit. So I write this whole story about how I think the future is going to look. So I believe that's the way the world is going to go. And I think Trump is fundamentally an inflection point in the part. Like it's a fork in the road. It reminds me of the, you know, that meme with the car, how it's going this way and then it kind of like swerves to the right last minute. That's exactly what just happened. And the two drivers in the car were really Elon and Trump. Like they changed the course of history. So I don't know if that's a good answer for what you're asking, but.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty, but simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's scored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
No, it's a really good answer. And do you think like part of playing into that, the shift is the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve and their policy around that for, you know, implementing, I don't want to call it like a hard money policy because it's not exactly there yet, but trying to get a little bit closer to that and like moving away from, you know, the Fed just basically trying to print its way out of the problems. Do you think that plays a role into this shift?
I mean, I think so. Honestly, I don't think it plays the biggest role right now. I think there's a bunch of cultural things that need to be fixed long before the money side of things need to get fixed. And, you know, them having a bit of a strategic reserve and all that sort of stuff is like, it's cute right now, but it's not going to move the needle for America, really. Like, America's such a big economy, such a big engine. The Federal Reserve is still so important. Everything is still denominated in US dollars, you know, debt, equities, all this sort of stuff. Like, for them, it's more like a, it's more to sound cool. It's more PR, and it's more like a small, consider like a big portfolio. Like imagine Bridgewater having like, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in like equities and then having a, you know, 1% or fraction of a 10 basis point allocation to some options, right? Like that's where I think it is at this stage. It's not like El Salvador where for them, you know, making $50 billion on Bitcoin is like a big fucking deal. Like America to make $50 billion on Bitcoin, it's like literally fucking nothing. It's like 3 hours of the national debt, right? Like it means it's completely fucking meaningless. But obviously in time, as we know, it'll become more and more and more and more important. So doing it now is fantastic. I just don't think, I think it's exaggerated by Bitcoiners how important it is right this second.
So you think the cultural thing needs to be fixed more, but prioritized more before the money. Do you think that those are correlated at all or no?
They are correlated. And this is one of the big epiphanies that I had in the book. As much as they are correlated, they are also independent in a big way. So I write about Rhodesia in the book. Are you familiar with the country of Rhodesia? Okay, no. So this is one of the things that drives me crazy in the Bitcoin space, is that people walk around with the fucking Zimbabwe $1 trillion note and be like, see, fucking money printing creates hyperinflation. And what they won't fucking realize is that the money printing didn't create the hyperinflation in Zimbabwe. What created the hyperinflation in Zimbabwe was the creation of Zimbabwe. That piece of land was called Rhodesia beforehand. And Rhodesia was the last landed democracy on the planet. What that means is the only people who had the right to vote were those with a threshold of property, right? So it was quite an aristocratic country, and it was the most prosperous country in Africa. They are fucking landlocked with 5 million people, and they were the breadbasket of the entire continent. What happened was after World War II and, you know, the communism kind of growing out of Russia and China and everything like that, the Russians and Chinese came into Africa and started slowly by slowly dismantling all of Africa. The Europeans at the same time were leaving because of all of the fucking early woke stuff about colonialism and everything. So the Belgians left, the French left and everything. So the communists came in and they started turning every single country in Africa into a communist fucking shithole, right? Like Mozambique and all this sort of stuff. That's when all the starvation started. That's when all the crap started, when the Europeans left and the commies came in. Rhodesia successfully fought off both Russia and fucking China with a small little bush army, the scouts, who were fucking legendary. And then what happened, because at around the same time you had the civil rights movement and you had all this fucking crap about democracy being the way of the future, both in England and in the US, and Rhodesia standing out as this country, not only militarily powerful, but socially powerful, safe, beautiful, all this sort of stuff, and able to fight off the fucking communists, which was not a democracy with one man, one vote. What happened was America and the UK embargoed their own fucking ally, Rhodesia, stopped weaponry, money, food, and everything going in and out, and Rhodesia fell. They installed Mugabe, and they scrapped the fucking name. They deleted the actual name of the country from Rhodesia. They turned it into Zimbabwe. They took all the fucking farms. They killed off all the white farmers, all that sort of stuff, and they destroyed the country. Only afterwards, the money printing came into account. And this is something that, like, as I said, drives me crazy about Bitcoin, is because they don't fucking know any history. They sit there with their stupid, you know, $1 trillion Zimbabwe note. Hyperinflation is not caused by money printing. This is what people don't fucking realize. The US can print money forever as long as there is faith in the system. Hyperinflation occurs when there is a loss of faith in the leadership, the culture, and the system itself. That's when you drop the money. But if you still have faith in the institutions, the structure, the model, the culture, and all that sort of stuff, you can afford to keep printing, which is why the US could technically afford to keep printing it forever. It's not going to go into a hyperinflation state until the culture completely erodes. So to me, the culture needs to be fixed just as much as the money, but it's not like money is not the root of all the problems. And in fact, oftentimes the problem is cultural first. Like, you don't just wake up one morning and be like, oh, maybe we should print money. Like, the culture has to decay to the point where that's the decision. And Rhodesia is, once again, like a fantastic example and a very sad example of somewhere where the culture was decimated in a very quick period of time because of what happened with the fucking scumbag communist pieces of shit who not only infiltrated that, but also infiltrated the upper ranks of America and the UK and kind of sunk their teeth in and fucked it all up. And you know what? Karma's a bitch, because now that's all happening in the West. Like, we are suffering what Rhodesia suffered. The Zimbabweification of the West is happening. Hopefully, fingers crossed, Trump and all that sort of stuff can kind of turn this around. But anyway, long way of saying that culture is as important or even more important than fixing the money. And I think that's where the energy needs to go in America with Trump and everything like that.
Yeah. So do you think, I guess, the rebellion against almost like the culture, the woke culture and everything started with Trump, or like in 2016, opposed to now, where if people were getting sort of pissed off with that? And then, you know, whatever you believe about the 2020 election, somehow, you know, Biden got 5 million more votes or whatever, 20 million more votes than any candidate that's ever gotten. You know, so that election I almost count as a wash. And it seems like to me, like this whole kind of rebellion against the culture started in 2016, where everybody was, you know, Trump almost basically ran on the drain the swamp kind of mantra. And that's what everybody seemed to wanted. And that was the culture around then. And then, you know, 2020 was their attempt to kind of, you know, get it all back. And then, you know, in 24, it was just too much for them to deny. And that's why Trump essentially won in a landslide. And that's why we're going to, I guess, revert back to that, I guess, my more pure American values, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I think in many ways, Trump represented that. It represented something that had been missing for a while. Because, I mean, the Obamification of America was significant, right? Like, he really pushed the country incrementally further and further and further left. So the Overton window moved. Trump kind of like tried to shift the Overton window, and it clearly resonated with people. And kind of, I think what really resonated in the first place with people with respect to Trump was his authenticity. I think they felt like, okay, we're going from this like fucking polished talker who's like literally what Obama is, very good fucking speaker, who's just bombing everyone, putting us into wars and destroying the economy and everything like that, to someone, you know, with a bit of authenticity. And I mean, particularly it didn't help that Hillary is so hated because she's such a vile creature that, like, I mean, maybe if Obama or someone like, you know, more palatable ran, maybe they would have beat Trump. But, you know, it was like Trump mopped the floor with that creature. So he got in, yes. His first round was a bit of a mess. I mean, as with Elon and his attempt to build the rockets and how many crashed and like attempt to build Tesla, like you got to learn, man. And Trump was learning on the job. Like the first 4 years were a practice run and he didn't do so well. Like, I mean, he at least kept America out of wars. He at least like, you know, didn't increase the taxes or whatever the case was. So there was some good there. But yeah, like it reminds me of the Star Wars, like whatever episode 3 was, then it was like The Empire Strikes Back and then like Return of the Jedi, right? Like that's where we are now. So we had like the 4 years of hell. And man, in many ways, it's funny, like the way the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, works. It's that time away gave him a time to learn, time to recuperate, and time for this movement to actually build a groundswell of support, right? So not like embodied in an individual, but more like letting people get radicalized themselves, which is really what happened between 2020 to 2024. We all became fucking radicalized. Like we all changed, we all shifted, we all found our voice and our position and everything like that. And then his comeback kind of like he acts as the I don't know if culmination is the right word, but like he kind of acts as the symbol is probably the right word, of all of that stuff, all of that pent up anger and rage and frustration, everything that we all had. And yeah, he is now, in my opinion, fundamentally the symbol of anti-woke moving in that direction. And I don't want this, I should say, like, I don't want this to sound like I'm sucking the guy off or anything like that. You know, he's got his flaws, you know, all that sort of stuff. We all do. But in terms of like the sheer aura of the guy and the sheer instinct, like those two things are more important for leadership than what he knows. Like that is way more important than reading a fucking book about from Mises or anything like that about Austrian economics. That is way less important. For Trump, he needs the aura of a leader and he needs to select a Ron Paul to go and deal with the Federal Reserve. Like, because Ron Paul doesn't have the same aura as Trump does. But Ron Paul knows way more about Austrian economics and can deal with that shit and sort that out, right? So this is like, that's why I think he's so important. He's so iconic and he's so symbolic in his behavior and his mannerisms and in who he is. Hence why I think he's such an important historical figure, particularly for where we are at this stage in the world.
Calling all shadowy supercoders. I've got an event specifically for you. That's right. I am working with PlebLab to help out with Top Builder. Top Builder, it's like the Top Chef, but for shadowy supercoders. They've got a Bitcoin prize worth of $15,000 that you can earn when you showing off your skills. But not only that, you will gain valuable exposure, mentorship, and great collaboration opportunities. And a lot of people raised money last year, not just the winner. So you have the potential to show your stuff. All you got to do is sign up now. Between now and December 31st, go through 3 rounds where you are showing your skills. And then at the end, you will showcase your stuff at Startup Day down in Austin. So go ahead and sign up now and get everything started for Top Builder and showcase your stuff and help build in the Bitcoin ecosystem. All right, enough for me. Back to the show.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to influence, right? I mean, the term influencer is always tossed around now, but you know, to like a greater extent, I think Trump is probably the greatest quote unquote influencer of our generation, because I mean, you just look at his interview numbers. Like, you look at when he goes on Rogan, it was getting like multiple million views per hour when it first came out. And, you know, and anybody that has him on the podcast automatically, like, it blows up, it changes everybody else's life and, you know, how much, however many people he's touched with that. So I do think it's like kind of like an interesting dichotomy that we're playing here with, you know, the way that, you know, Trump was initially a businessman and now he's like becoming the leader of the country. And the way that things were framed around him prior, during his first run, when he was first president, and now kind of the way that things are framed in a relatively short period of time of his life, how like people have just flipped the script on his opinions. But I do think like he's kind of the symbol of, you know, I guess almost like the rebellion against the status quo, against the wokeness and everything like that. So I think it's interesting his role playing in that and how he's kind of integrating Bitcoin into that too. And I think on the flip side of things too, it's also how he's rebelling against media. Because, you know, he was always kind of starting in 2016. It was like the fake news media going against CNN. And it seems like there's always this distrust around that. How big do you think that's going to play that played on people, I guess, almost flocking to X once Elon bought it? Do you think that like Trump's kind of narrative around, you know, CNN, MSNBC, like all these news outlets made more people like kind of desired like for the free speech and everything like that?
Totally. I mean, it was push pull, right? Like, so these idiots are their own worst enemy. Like, so Trump noticed that. This is again why his instinct is so good, right? So like he notices something, his instinct tells him something, and then he like spits out something that is like really funny, but it's like hits the nail on the head, right? So he's a master at doing that. And he did that with the whole terminology, the fake news, right? And the lame street media. So like that stuff came out. He incepted that in many ways in our heads. People ran with that. And then at the same time, the idiots at MSNBC and all this sort of stuff, they doubled down on their censorship and biased news and all that sort of stuff, which, you know, you got this push-pull, right? Like that led people to an alternative. And I think that's really what Elon saw. He's like, man, X or Twitter is a social media platform, not a social network, very different. It's a social media platform. And I think he very presciently saw that, which is, I mean, $44 billion, people say it's a lot of money and all this sort of stuff, which it obviously is, but it was the best fucking purchase in history. It's the most important, like, news and media application in the world, honestly. And that's what it's become. And yeah, his instinct as well, because Elon is a very instinctual creature as well, which is what makes him a great leader and a great entrepreneur. Like, you have to have really strong instincts as an entrepreneur. You have to have a sense of where things are going. He picked that, he hit that nail on the head, and he went to where the puck was going to go, right? And he kind of sat there and he picked up all of that traffic, all of that desire, all that pent up frustration. And he did something that no other entrepreneur could have done with Twitter, not fucking Dan Costello, not Jack Dorsey, not Evan, the original founder, none of them. Like, Elon was the guy who saw that and pulled it off. So yeah, but anyway, to your original question, I think Trump was the pull towards that. And then the idiot, lamestream, fake news media, they kind of pushed people in that direction as well, just because of their stupidity and incompetence.
Well, what effect do you think that's playing on businesses as well? Because it's now seemingly that the phrase is being popularized that go woke, go broke. So a lot of these companies that are going more on the woke and kind of doubling down on that are losing a lot of money. Like, how big of an influence do you think that's going to have just on business practices in general here going forward?
I mean, I hope it's going to have a big impact. I mean, the whole HRification of business is like, it's a disaster. It does no good for anybody, not for the business owner, not for the people working there, not for the customer, not for anyone. It just like lines bureaucrats' pockets and like creates open positions for fucking morons, right? Like, I hate the concept of a HR department. It's stupid, right? So like we've got that famously in our company, Solantis. On our LinkedIn page, it says specifically, we do not and will never have a HR department. So if that's the job you're looking for here, or if you require that in the place you work, look elsewhere. Like, and I think that's extremely important, number one. And my hope is that this, I mean, these are, again, these are Overton windows and trends. And I hope that it moves the world more in that direction so that we have a healthier competitive environment for businesses to build shit because they're good at it and not be afraid of having to fucking hire trannies and whatever just because somebody said so.
Well, do you think that was because a big aspect of it was, you know, money essentially being free? I mean, I know Bitcoiners like to revert everything back to the money and the economic policies, but having a zero interest rate environment, you know, if you think something can boom, whatever, you're getting a lot of money in. You don't necessarily need to make money. I mean, like Uber right now in the US is, or not in the US, but globally, it's never actually made a profit. It's all in the hope that this automated driving Uber is going to be able to capture a bunch of that market. Amazon, kind of same thing. Now they make money with AWS, but initially they didn't make money at first and they were kind of like just funded from all venture capital money. So do you think, you know, with, I guess, the reversion back away from that, a lot of the fluff will be taking out of businesses and we'll get back to, I guess, like more of the traditional business practices where it'll actually be like, you know, businesses that are actually making a profit are the ones that are going to survive instead of these ones that are just essentially being propped up by like venture capital money?
I mean, I don't think venture capital has a really important role to play because some ideas and some businesses and some things just require a whole lot of capital up front before they can come to fruition. I mean, SpaceX is one of those examples. Amazon is one of those. I mean, Amazon is the fucking greatest service on the planet. Like, and you realize that when you live in a country where Amazon doesn't exist and you're like, fucking hell, I wish I had Amazon, right? So it is the greatest fucking service. And I'm very happy that venture capital exists and that the stock market exists and that people like Bezos exist with a big enough vision to come and build and create that. I've got no problem with that. Where I have a problem, obviously, and I guess we can align on this, is that there are ridiculous zombie companies that genuinely do nothing and they get bailed out on a consistent basis, and things like Boeing, right? Like, you know, that's a good example of something that should ideally go bankrupt and be taken over by somebody who knows how to run a business, cut out all of the woke shit and all that sort of stuff and actually build a functional company. And there's obviously many more of those. There's like the big pharma stuff and the seed oil fucking companies and this and this and this and that. But we got to remember that's not only a function of just because there is a money printer. It is a function of lobbyists, of culture, of all of that shit, all of that disease that's managed to get its way into the political spheres because they have leverage. They have opinion leverage. They have lobbying leverage. They have all of that leverage. So it's not just that the money printer exists, is that there's a concerted push towards all of this stuff like bad education, bad food, bad pharmaceuticals, bad media, bad all that sort of stuff. Is like it's because scumbags and parasites have made their way into these things. It's not just because of the money. So we have to fix both. And I think that's the big epiphany that I had in writing this book was I realized, man, Bitcoiners are right in that fixing the money goes a long way to fixing the world, but I'm 100% certain it's not enough on its own. There's a lot more work to do, and that's where the culture and the character comes in. In fact, like I say, this is we need both capital and culture. Sorry, capital and character to build civilization. Can't do it with capital alone.
Are you looking for a way to earn some free sats? Who isn't? Well, I've got the perfect way for you. It's an app called Yopaki. Besides having the absolute coolest name in the game, they've got an interactive card game called Lotteria. Oh, look at that accent. I'm just hitting it, huh? That can teach you the history of Bitcoin and financial literacy. They've got amazing services and one of the slickest mobile wallets. Download it now using this link and you can get 500 sats on the house on Green Candle, and then you can play Lotteria every single day in order to potentially get some sats. All you got to do is match the cards
And it's an extremely fun and interactive way to learn more about Bitcoin. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that gets back to the point where, like, you know, a lot of people say, like, money doesn't change you. It just elevates who you are deep as a person. So I think, you know, I definitely resonate with that message as well. But, you know, you've brought it up, the book. Why don't you tell a little bit us, or tell everybody here a little bit, like, kind of the premise behind it? And it's Bushido Bitcoin, is that correct? I don't want to botch the name if I'm saying it incorrectly. Tell us the premise behind it, and kind of like the motivation writing the book, and how it's all come to life.
Cool. So the motivation initially was very different to where the book has come out. So the motivation came from a discussion I had with Eric Kaysen back in 2022, where he and I discussed a book called Shogun by James Clavell, which is now a really cool TV series. And Bushido, the term, means a code of virtue or the way of the warrior, right? So it's in feudal Japan. It's kind of similar to chivalry. There was like a code of roughly 8 virtues, like justice, loyalty, compassion, respect, excellence, etc., right? So we had this discussion. We thought, hey, is there some emerging virtues in the Bitcoin space that are kind of like a Bushido? And that was the original premise of the discussion. That was the original premise of the book, was I was trying to find an emergent set of virtues that were coming out of the Bitcoin space and call it the Bushido of Bitcoin. But the book completely evolved. Like I rewrote this book 8 fucking times. So the one that finally went live, which is, you know, 530 pages, like the thing's a monster, was the 8th draft. I probably could have done another 2, but I thought I have to release this at some point. So the book evolved into something else. And I've got the description here on Amazon where I say, what does it take to build civilization? I spent 2 years wrestling with this question. Is it enough if Bitcoin wins? How will those who hold it behave when they become the new elite? What are the character and virtues required so that we don't merely replace an old corrupt ruling class with a new one? Writing this book changed me. In 2022, I took a hiatus from business to travel, get married, and write. I was in a relatively dark place at the time, feeling out of place, like I was born in the wrong century, as my wife kept telling me. The original version of the book held a more nostalgic desire for a morally superior past that would not return. But 2 years, 8 drafts, and more than 130,000 words later, it took on a new energy, a more ascendant tone that has made me more hopeful for the future. And I kind of go on to say that, you know, this book is a white pill in a world full of red, black, and blue pills. It's a distillation of everything I've learned throughout my entire life, and particularly the ideas I've absorbed from the great stories of the past. So it combines like lessons from great warrior cultures, from the heroes, from the greatest thinkers and the religions and philosophies of all time, like Nietzsche, Spengler, Hopper, Christianity, feudalism, Austrian economics, all this sort of stuff. And I kind of try and distill what is the code that we must live by to succeed on a Bitcoin standard and build an ascendant, virtuous civilization. Like, that's the big fucking question. And I think I have some pretty compelling answers in the book. As I said, it's broken up into 6 parts. Like, there's the prelude, which kind of like sets the tone for the book. Then there's like an origin section, which is like history of the samurai and other like similar historical codes. Then the meat of the book is the virtues, so the 10 virtues, and I go into them etymologically, the Japanese etymology, the Chinese roots, the English etymology, the Latin roots, etc. Then I go into like part 3, which is called integration, or part 4, sorry, where I ask some really tough questions about, like, you know, does wealth corrupt? Like, so I go into wealth, I go into governance, I go into culture, and I go into seasons and cycles, like how existence is a cyclical thing. Then I go into practice, because I say, okay, well, true knowledge is embodied in action. So it's like, knowing shit is not enough. Like, we actually have to do something about it. And then, as I said, the final part is the story called The Sovereign Cross, which tries to paint a picture of what the future might look like. So that's like the whole breakdown of the book. I'm going to end up turning it into a series of books. So the second book I've already started, it's called The Metaphysics of War and Beauty. That's going to be the the future book, which will come out next year. I'm going to plan to do probably 4 books in total here. So I'm going to do The Bushido of Bitcoin, book 1, book 2, The Metaphysics of War and Beauty, book 3, Visions of the Future, and book 4. Probably, I'm still undecided, but maybe The Bushido of Business, and kind of talk about how like the future businesses and organizations will be built, and like how to basically make money and build wealth on a Bitcoin standard. So that's kind of like this book, what the plan is for the future. So lots to build, lots to do. Ross Stevens wrote the foreword, which was fucking amazing. The guy's a machine. So yeah, it's available on Amazon now. So if people want to pick it up, they can go and do it. I highly, highly, highly recommend the hardcover because it's like thick as fuck. And it's one of those books that you just want on your bookshelf.
Yeah. How many pages you got in that bad boy?
530, and it's 2.5 pounds. Like the thing's a fucking brick. Like it's also a great self-defense thing. So if like someone breaks into your house, you just fucking throw this thing at them, motherfucker's dead.
Yeah, it protects against the $8 wrench attack, huh?
Exactly.
You just chuck the book at him. But yeah, I'll put all that in the show notes. Everybody should check it out. So Svetsky, if you want to leave everybody with one last message here on the future, I mean, we've covered a breadth of topics. What's your one last final message for the people here to end on a high note?
Yeah, for sure. I think I'll end it with this. It's that Bitcoin is fantastic, and it gives us a position to be people with capital. I think the next frontier is we need to become people with character. And I think a lot of us in the Bitcoin space, you know, I've been a little bit negative here, but I think a lot of us have the character, and we have particularly the ingredients for great character. And I think now it's incumbent on us to build that character, to inculcate these virtues, to develop ourselves as men and women, as leaders and all of that, because we're going to be in a position of socioeconomic status. Like we're going to have a high status in the next decade when Bitcoin is worth millions of dollars. So with great status, with great power comes great responsibility. And we need to become better now. We can't just wait to be fucking rich and then be like, oh, I should work on myself then, because that's proven to be a recipe for failure. So that's my final message. We're going to get the capital, but let's all work on character, because that's the secret ingredient for building civilization.
I love it. And then I'll put the link to the book in the show notes. And then where else can everybody else find you?
Yeah, I mean, just jump on, if they go bushidoofbitcoin.com, all of my links there, Substack, all that sort of shit, or svetsky.info. That'll send you to my link tree and all of my links, prior blogs, all the shit's there.
Yeah, 100%. So Svetsky, thanks so much for coming on the show. And yeah, man, hope to see this book take off and a bunch of people not only using it as self-defense, but also reading it and taking the message in.
Appreciate it, bro.
Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.